It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and once again, I'm joined by my main man, Jamie. What's going on, brother? It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, brother. Glad you're back in the motherland of Hungary. How was your time in London?
Neither of those statements are factually correct. One, Hungary is not the motherland, and two, I was not in London. But apart from that, you knocked it out the park.
Thanks, man. Well, you were in the UK.
I was in the UK. I went to Manchester.
Right. Oh, that's where
England is more than the South, Jamie. England is more than the South. Get it right.
We're starting
the podcast off on the wrong foot. You and I, we're gonna have a row. We're gonna fall out here. No, my trip was fantastic. I think we mentioned on the last show I was over there going to cover Octagon 48, their debut into the UK market. It was in the AO Arena in Manchester. And I've got to say, man, what an incredible production that they put on. Considering this was their first time in the UK, they did a fantastic job. The organization, the way that everything ran, the hospitality, it was truly superb. It had all of the feeling of a big show about it. Of course, I haven't had the opportunity to cover a UFC event for the press yet. Not yet, but I will. Soon enough, I hope. But it certainly, I would imagine that's what it would be like. And it was excellent. From the seats they put us right, you know, cage side to get close to the action, from the access to being able to wander back and forth backstage to the press room, to the getting access to interviews for fighters. Then they have an organized press conference before the fights, after the fights. I can't give them enough credit. And they're going back to the UK very soon. They're going to Newcastle in January, Birmingham in April. So if you are in the UK and you haven't checked out Octagon yet, I highly recommend you doing so. And in terms of the actual fights, yeah, there was a few, let's say, you know, less exciting fights, but overall, the quality of the fights delivered. If you go in expecting the UFC, of course, you're probably going to be disappointed because either some of these guys are on the way up and hoping to get to the UFC, or they've been to the UFC and haven't quite reached the top, but it doesn't mean that the fights and the product can't be of high quality, can't be entertaining, and can't give you an enjoyable Saturday night. And that is certainly what happened with Octagon. It was a ton of fun. One of the fights fell off. Talk about chaos, man. There was, and unfortunately, he was one of the main draws of the card, Shem Rock, fighting out of Next Gem MMA, a teammate of Paddy Pimblett and Molly McCann there in the gym out of Liverpool. He was on Octagon Challenge, England versus Ireland, one of the coaches for Team Ireland. They put all of this build-up and hype and production behind him. Of course, what happens at the weigh-in? Him and the Slovakian police officer, who've got serious beef, rub heads together. There's a little pushing and shoving, and Shem inexplicably throws a body kick, damages the guy's ribs to the point where the doctor can't clear him to fight. So that fight falls off.
Fuck.
Just ridiculous. I mean, and then, of course, the whole narrative afterwards is Pokorny, you know, shat it, didn't want the fight, so on and so forth. Look, the guy's a veteran. It was one of those situations where he wasn't warmed up, he wasn't tensing, he wasn't, you know, anticipating and defending a kick coming. It came out of nowhere. And the clip that went viral, or they put up on their social medias that was captured by their live stream feed for the weigh-ins, didn't come close to letting you know how loud and violent the kick was. I was there in the room and immediately I tweeted out, oh, this guy's injured. Like, there's no way that kick landed and he's not hurt. It was a clusterfuck. But they're going to rebook the fight. Hopefully, you know, Shem's learned his lesson from this. He did apologize, but just a bit of a mess. Just a bit of a mess overall. It's a shame, you know, both guys missed out on a payday. Shem didn't get to make the walk in front of, you know, what would have been a huge crowd that he brought down with him from Liverpool. So, yeah, just sucks for everyone, really.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the area, you're saying he's, you know, he trains with Paddy Pimblett. I mean, that guy still has such a huge following, even though he hasn't fought for almost a year now or something. But man, that's a big pain. If they can reschedule that, and even if it is the Newcastle card, that'll be
No, they're not giving him a home fight after that. They're putting him on the final year, putting it on the final card of the year in Prague, which will be a sellout, and he will be the most hated man in that arena. He's cost himself home advantage there.
Look, we're all in for the drama, mate. And oh man, speaking of fucking loud crowds, how fucking loud was the Brazilian crowd on the last fight night, man? Well, fucking believable.
You tell me. So I didn't watch it live, obviously, because I was covering Octagon, and then I got home and just threw myself into bed. I was exhausted. And then I've recapped and watched the fights, but like at stupid hours early in the morning with no sound on, because I've been getting up early to watch them. So I didn't actually taste any of the Brazilian atmosphere. I was at Brazilian barbecue on Friday night, and I ate my body weight in ribeye and cinnamon pineapple and other good stuff. No, but tell me, like,
your toilet has been getting some Brazilian atmosphere. Is that what you're telling me, Lewis?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I might need a mustached Italian plumber to come and sort things out and the toilet.
Well done for embracing the culture fully, and I'm sure your wife appreciates it.
Yeah, so tell me, we've obviously seen the Parisian crowd go absolutely bananas. We've watched those cards together so fairly recently. Tell me, what were your thoughts on the Brazil card? How did they stack up compared to Paris, maybe?
Well, I think the difference between a lot of these like big cards is the amount. The arena was full from the prelims. Like, yeah. Bruce Buff is getting such a huge standing ovation. The commentators, they take the soundproofing of the cans, just what wasn't stacking up to the loudness of the Brazilian crowd. Like, they have so much passion for their fighters, and obviously, as the guys were explaining, they're such an informed and educated audience. So when it comes to like ground game, when it comes to, you know, things that maybe the casual, like, you know, would appreciate, things like standing and banging, and that's it. They appreciate the jiu-jitsu, when people pass, when people are getting into great positions. Like, just the roar from the crowd was like, it was really stunning. It just would have been amazing to be there live. But yeah, so I think it stacks up with some of the best that, and that just, you know, obviously just from the prelims onwards, it was a fucking wild, wild event. Yeah.
Right up until the end, when Jaitan Almeida decided to take a big steaming turd all over it. I mean, let's get into it, man, because yeah, I was going through, and you know, when you go back and rewatching the fights, I'm on a time crunch, so I'm like, okay, I've got to pick and choose my battles here, and there's some fights which I'm not going to go back and watch. And I saw the absolute stank on Twitter about it, and I went, I am not spending 25 minutes of my life to watch Jaitan Almeida play, you know, Buckaroo with the Black Beast. It's just not going to happen. Why would I ever want to subject myself to that? To have a guy basically, you know, completely your beck and call to be able to say, I'm going to take this to the mat whenever I want to do it, and to do nothing with that and to not finish the fight is an absolute disgrace. And he's absolutely shat down his leg, because we now know we have the interim heavyweight championship coming up. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that. Cyril Garn is, you know, on the outside looking in right now when it comes to title opportunities. Almeida with a statement over a guy who's fought for the belt twice, the Black Beast, the fan favorite, the crazy horse, Derek Lewis. If he had to come out and absolutely put it on him, tapped him out, elbowed his head through the canvas, got on the microphone, made a statement, got the Brazilian crowd all kinds of hyped up. UFC stands up and listens and goes, oh, let's get Jelton into the mix. Maybe he's going to be in a number one contender fight. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to see him fight anyone, maybe ever again. Like, that's how ridiculously shit. And I didn't even watch it. I wasn't even subjected to it. And that's how angry I am about it. Imagine if you had to watch it in real time at 4 o'clock in the morning.
It wasn't great, man. I think the bad taste is left because I think there's such a love for Derek Lewis. He is, like, even in the Brazil crowd, you know, obviously they're going for the homeboys and girls, but there's a universal love for people that are just wild men, people that put on shows, people that knock people out in devastating fashion, people who lead the knockout race, people who take their shorts off and have sweaty balls. You know, like, there's a universal love for the event. And I think it was, as you said, it was just doused, man. But I think that it wasn't that Gyleton wasn't doing it. Derek Lewis put on a great defensive performance and really negated a lot of his ground.
World class jiu-jitsu artist Derek Lewis.
Okay, yeah. As he was, I think he said he's a purple belt. He's like, yeah, you know, he's looking forward to stacking up against him.
Did he get an upgrade when he landed in Brazil? Like everyone just gets an automatic upgrade when you land in Brazil.
That's it. I think you can purchase it at the airport. So it was kind of shitty. Like Derek Lewis looked in great shape again. You know how he came in last time with some abs. He's looking good again. And I wouldn't take anything away from Derek Lewis if I were the UFC. I would still want to put him in. Big fight.
Put him in big fights, but don't put him against wrestlers. Like nobody wants to see this. No one needs to see it. We all know what's going to happen. Don't do it. Put him in there against dudes who are coming up, who've got knockout power, who think they're ready for the top guys, these new young up and comers, and feed them to the black beast and see if he rips the damn head off.
One thing I did notice though is how fucking huge Almeida looked. He is a monster. He made Derek Lewis look small, and that is not an easy feat. I mean,
dude, he fought at middleweight back in the day, and he made welterweight in 2016. That's ridiculous.
That's insane. He must have been starving. That man.
Sorry. Yeah. I've just checked a note here. That's his favela weight. That was when he was making decisions. It's like, who's eating today? Wednesday? No, come on, you're gonna eat. And Thursday, then it's my turn to eat. That's favela weight. That's absolutely obscene.
That's crazy, man. But yeah, otherwise, not a fight you're gonna go and rewatch or ever talk about again, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, he's done well since coming into the UFC, of course, Dana White Contender Series, and then rolled off stoppage. So let's give him a mulligan. I'll be willing to give him a mulligan on this one. I recognize that Derek Lewis is a dangerous opponent and so on and so forth. But he now has to go, okay, maybe you were running through everyone, you fought every man and their dog before getting through the weight classes and beating up everyone. But now you ran into someone, a proper veteran, a proper test at the game. Okay, so someone inside pretty much the top 10, basically. You can't now jump up. You've got to now do a Curtis Blaydes, a Sergey Spivak, another test at heavyweight to let us know you're ready. Because, okay, you beat Derek Lewis, but you couldn't finish him. You couldn't get him out of there. What did you learn from that? Let's see what you can do against someone else.
For sure, man. I think that both of those two calls are really good as well. Because, I mean, if you're stacking them up and against someone who actually has ground game, both of the guys that you just mentioned, it actually won't be the same thing that we're seeing over and over again. But the thing is, if you put him against Ciryl Gane, it could potentially be the same thing.
Oh, dude, he would take Ciryl Gane down and submit him. Like, I've got no doubt about it. That's how good his wrestling and jiu-jitsu is. And you're like, well, that doesn't teach us anything. Let's see what he can do against a more well-rounded opponent.
Exactly.
I saw some nonsense on Twitter, someone trying to tell me that Gyleton Almeida is better than Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall was shagged that boy. It's inconceivably seven different ways on Sunday if he wanted to. Tom Aspinall would make mincemeat out of Gyleton Almeida right now. So we'll talk more about Tommy Aspinall soon. Let's just run through the rest of this fight night because so much to talk about. Don't want to spend too long on ultimately a main event that A, was ultimately boring, and B, that I actually didn't even watch. So let's move on to what ended up being the co-main event, because the co-main got pulled because Petrosian was sick. So we got Gabriel Bonfim and Nicholas Dolby said step up in there. And I think I said everyone on the previous show, this is the fight to watch. This is going to be the fight of the night. Oh, and it was certainly the fight of the night. And and I nearly called him Dickless. Nicholas Dolby is an absolute Viking warrior. He weathered the storm early on. He used his experience. And then he took Bonfim into deep waters and went, wha-bam! Flipped the switch. And it was all over Red Rover. He just started unleashing that vicious, violent, nasty clinch game, and it was sensational. And this man has got a very, very good record in the UFC, beating Alex Cowboy Oliveira. Okay, he lost to some guy called Jesse Ronson, and I'm going to be honest, I don't have a clue who he is, but he popped hot, he pissed hot, and that was overturned. So we'll give him a wash on that one. He beat Daniel Rodriguez. He lost to Tim Means. Tim Means is a proper grizzly veteran. There's no shame in losing to Tim Means by decision. And then he goes through and he beats Claudio Silva, Wally Alvarez, Muslim Salikov, which was a tremendous fight and a great performance by Dolby. And then this is by far the biggest, best win of his career, to go into Brazil and to knock out their up-and-coming wonder boy, Gabriel Bonfim, in the way that he did. Nicholas Dolby, son, get yourself a ranked fight. How much did you enjoy that one?
Man, I fucking loved it. Undefeated Brazilian, you know, coming off a whole bunch of Brazilian wins, the crowd's going fucking mental, right? So this guy is in every position, like, you know, like atmospherically to win this. And as you said, man, Nicholas Dolby weathered that early storm. Gabriel looked fucking incredible. He is a great fighter. But yeah, it just, when it got to those later rounds where you're taking that damage, when you're getting gritty, when you're getting fucking dirty with it, yeah, that Viking prowess just came and he fucking pillaged, man. It was fucking sexy. I loved it. So good.
Man, I would love to see him get a ranked opponent next. He's, you know, he's not a spring chicken, old Nicholas Dolby. 38 years old now in the welterweight division. He's, you know, he's probably got a year left of like significant fights before his body starts to betray him a little bit. But he's smart. He's in very good shape. Get him in there, someone ranked. I don't even like Kevin Holland, I think, is what's going on with Kevin Holland now? He fought Jack Della, and that was a bit of a iffy fight. Like, yeah. Give him Kevin Holland. What a great fight, a big name. The UFC likes Kevin Holland. Maybe they do a fight night in the Apex or something like that, main event. You give Nicholas Dolby that opportunity to prove himself. Give him a 5-round fight. Give him the opportunity to break himself into the rankings before it's too late. Or, you know, Rinat Fakhradinov, who had the draw on the card there earlier on in the night. He's ranked 15. Maybe you give... Yeah, give him Fakhradinov or someone like that. But I just want to see Nicholas Dolby get his due, man, because he's had a hell of a career. He's got a great story as well. I think back in the day he was in the UFC back in the day after coming through Cage Warriors, winning the belt there. Actually has a win back in the day over Zaleski Dos Santos, who had the draw with Fakhradinov way back in the day. He went to a draw with Darren Till, and then he lost a couple and got released. Goes back to Cage Warriors, peels off a good run there, beat some dangerous guys, and then back in the UFC. And he's just you love to see it. Really, really happy for this guy. Co-main event, featured card, a featured fight night, eyes of the world upon him, and he comes in and he performs and he delivers. Superb, absolutely tremendous, Nicholas Dolby.
Love it. Next one, Rodrigo Nascimento, Dontel Mays.
Yeah, watch that one. I didn't watch that one either. I saw it was two fat, sloppy, out of shape heavyweights going to a decision who've already fought before. A rematch that literally not one man in the world asked for. The UFC decided to jam it down our throats. There was not a cat's chance in hell that I was tuning in to watch that. Was it as boring as the...
They were throwing. I guess it was just... Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was didn't make sense for it to go to a decision, but I guess actually credit to Dontel Mays for lasting that long, because Nascimento was like clearly a lot faster with the hands and stuff like that. But yeah, two huge guys like that. Whoever bet this to go to a decision, like what the fuck? No fucking way. Very unlikely. But otherwise, the fight beforehand was great. I really like watching Caio Corralho, and yeah, he was. He's putting those fighting nerds or whatever his thing is to, yeah, bringing them up to glory, man. He looked great. As he says, when he was on the Contender Series, that he's actually right-handed, but he comes in southpaw, and all of his training's always been southpaw. So it's just part of their way of structuring their fights, because we need their dominant hand to be the jab hand, because you're using it the most often. And they think
Bruce Lee shit. That's some old... Yeah. Jeet Kune Do, strong hand forward.
Yeah, so I mean, good on him for getting another win. It was, yeah, Abbas Magomedov. Has he lost again recently?
Abbas came in and then he somehow got the Sean Strickland fight and got pieced up by Sean Strickland, now champion. Yeah. Just shows you, man. He dominated the European regional scene. He came in, beat a lower level opponent, and hands up. I jumped on the hype train. I went, oh, he's a Magomedov. He's beaten people. He's, you know, he got a great record in Europe. Let's get some fresh blood in the division. And this was at a time when it looked like no one was ever challenging Izzy. And I was like, fast track the guy. And I actually think I said back in the day, I said, give him Sean Strickland. This was before, after his very first win, fights fell through. he's getting some dirty Chechenian money keeping him afloat, because he does not fight enough to be earning a living on Abbas Magomedov. There's no way that he's not getting money from a shady source to sponsor his career.
He should buy a fucking treadmill then. That guy gasses.
Dude, his cardio is garbage. Unbelievable how bad. Just really, really poor. But nice to see Kai Obrayu get that win. And, you know, he came close to putting him away. He's only had one finish in the UFC, which was against Oleg Sejuk, and that was a very, very impressive performance. Another finish would have been nice for him here. I think that lack of a dominant win probably just keeps him on the outside, doesn't quite get him into the rankings at this point in time. But maybe the next fight for him is we've got Dustin Jacoby coming up soon. I think he's fighting this weekend at UFC 295, if I'm not mistaken. Dustin Jacoby. No, excuse me. He's fighting at UFC 296 to close out the year. Let me pull that fight card. Dustin Jacoby is fighting Alonzo Menifield. So that's 14 versus 15. Maybe you give the loser Caio Barraio and see if he's ready to, you know, see what happens there. I don't know. Well, let's wait and see. But very, very good performance from him.
Man, he's peeled off, what, 7 in a row now after the 2 contender series. Even after winning the contender series, didn't get a contract. Second, you know, won again, got the contract. So good on him. We wish him the best. Elvis Brenner, tell me, did you like that one? What a fucking man.
That was one worth watching. My goodness. That was one of the better knockouts you'll see ever. I don't know. He killed a man. I don't know what else to say. It was superb.
Public execution. But I mean, was that the only Brazilian versus Brazil fight on the card? I think it was.
Brazilian on Brazilian violence.
Yeah. So it was great, man. And just to see him, like, you know, jump up on the cage screaming, just ripped and fucking crazy. Like, yeah, good on him, man. He fucking smashed it.
Although, let's be honest, the guy's name, Kanan Krzyzewski.
Not the most Brazilian name.
there's no way that this bro is actually Brazilian. He was born in Brazil. Wow. I stand corrected.
There you go.
Yeah. No. He reeks of, you know, someone shady from the Urals has fled to Brazil and started a new life because you know, they were ostracized by an oligarch or something like that. But yeah. You know, well, I think he took this fight. He came through the contender series. Was this fight on short notice? There was something about it because it was at a catch weight of 165 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did mention that. I can't remember the exact details, but they have cancelled bout. So Esteban Ribovich.
That's right. Ribovich,
he did mention that in the post-fight as well. He's like, so obviously, so Kanan came in on short notice, I believe.
Elvis hopefully he gets another shot on his entire UFC legacy, and just the second loss of his career. Second loss of his career isn't getting bonked by Elvis Brenner in front of the world. Hopefully he gets another opportunity. Speaking of people who got bonked, pour one out. Very, very sad. My guy, Modestus Bukauskas, got absolutely flatlined by Vitor Petrino, who's just got absolute dynamite hands, and he made a mistake. He got caught with that check left hook. It got timed, and that's all she wrote. It sucked. Yeah, man. It sucked to see. I was sad for him. I'm a big fan of Modestus, but back to the drawing board for him, because Vitor Petrino looks like he's the business.
Yeah, man, strong lad, as you said, dynamite in those fucking hands, man. He's got the touch of death. You see all these big Brazilians come through, man. You got Johnny Walkers and stuff like that. These, whatever this is, you know, Alex Pereira, fucking touch of death. Whatever that left hook is, man, it's great. It's
what is in the water / pharmacy in Brazil? Who knows?
Hey, we gotta give it up to our girl who we love on this podcast, Angela Hill, for putting it on Denise Gomes. Like, she pushed the pace that entire
Denise,
fight.
you were the chosen one. You were the chosen one. You were supposed to end this reign of pain, suffering, and boring decision fights.
But Angela Hill, she had the high ground, man. She really put a pace.
She did. She had the high ground. She had the reach. And she put a big old egg on my face.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that her record is actually a little bit more skewed now, because it was getting dangerously close to 15 and 14. which is not great. But the other girl, Eduarda Moria, good on her for smashing it out and not getting a decision win, like actually fucking just absolutely smashing Ruiz. That was great. I mentioned in the last pod about just being unbelievably beautiful, but glad to know that she can just execute people as well. So she was great all round.
Yeah, absolutely good for her. And that is all it wrote for Montserrat Ruiz in the UFC, almost certainly. The only win that she's got on her record is over Cheyenne Vlismas, who I believe has just given birth to Roman Dolidze's kid. That's like a whole, storyline going on. But yeah, this Montserrat Ruiz has lost 3 in a row, all by stoppage. You know, the only thing that you can go, saved her maybe a little bit, is that Moira missed weight so badly. That might be the lifeline that the UFC goes, go on, we'll give you one more. You took the fight, you kept the fight on. Your opponent missed weight by 4.5 pounds. She didn't miss weight. She failed to make weight. That's poor. Yeah.
I totally forgot about that, actually. Just now thinking back to the fight, how much bigger she looked. I was like,
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And I mean, you're missing by that much. The UFC is probably going to be giving you a prod going, get up there to the flyweight
division. Yeah, sort it out. Yeah. Mark DeCassie. Yeah. Split decision just is what it is. The crowd was not happy about that, but
I'm sure. And you know what? Neither am I, because Mark DeCassie came in and he was an absolute wild man and a super exciting fighter. And he's just not anymore. It's a shame.
Just very hit and miss with the career coming forward. That's, you know, obviously we always love to support a local UK guy, but
he's only 30 years old as well. Like, he's got so much ahead of him. Like, he can't just become a careful fighter now. Like, he just, that's crazy. And I would understand if he'd been absolutely bonked and he was gun shy because but he hasn't. He lost to Fazeev, lost to Rafael Alves, Joel Alvarez. Like, he's lost to decent guys, but he's just become so cautious now. I don't know.
Yeah, man.
It's hard. And it tells you the UFC, that's exactly what the UFC think of him. You can be the curtain jerker on the undercard. Like, that's what we think of you right now in terms of your prospects and where we value you as a fighter. So I hope he turns it around. I hope he starts getting some, because he's got talent, man. He's got talent. But I'd like to see it. Anyway, let's talk some title fights, man, before we move on to UFC 295 quickly, because Dana White came in, he dropped his big billionaire ball sack on the table, got on Instagram as he usually does, and went, hey, boys and girls, how would you like some fight announcements? I've got not one, I've got not two, three title fights for you for January, February, April, or January, February, March of next year. Absolutely sensational stuff. He starts off and he gives us Sean Strickland versus Dricus du Plessis. Wow. And I'm happy for Dricus, because I think we talked about that maybe him not going out to Australia, turning the fight down against Izzy, you know, would he live to regret that? Would he get passed over? UFC dangled the number one contender fight between Khamzat and Kamaru Usman to get them to take that co-main event and save the card in Abu Dhabi. But it just goes to show anything can happen in this crazy game that we call mixed martial arts. Khamzat, A, got hurt, and B, wasn't very impressive, especially in rounds 2 and 3 against Kamaru. Kind of shut down his leg a little bit as well. And the UFC goes, hey, Dricus, back to you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And obviously, Izzy saying he's not going to fight for a long time as well. I mean, that just took out the whole... If they were saving DDP for Izzy, that's out the window now. Where do you put DDP? He's not going to fight Whitaker. He's not going to fight 100%. Marvin Vettori. He's going to come in and fight for the title. If it's like, if Khamzat put on a fucking show, that'd be his spot, as you just said.
Exactly.
That isn't the case. So I'm glad this timeline worked out. I'm really keen to see this, but I think DDP is going to come in fucking ginormous, as he always does, into this fight. But I'm a huge fan of Sean Strickland, man. I'm a fan of the chaos, so I gotta stop doubting Sean Strickland
at this point and go, actually, you know what, his style's extremely difficult for people to cope with, and his, you know who's had cardio problems in the past? Dricus du Plessis. And Sean Strickland is relentless, and he will put Dricus on the back foot and he will march him down over and over and over and over. And by all reports, according to Michael Bisping, he never used it, but Sean Strickland is an absolute monster on the mat as well. should be able to stuff any takedown defenses from DDP. So this is going to be a hell of a fight, man. A hell of a fight. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. But as I said, that's not all. And that's not the one I'm looking forward to the most, because Uncle Dana filled up his big old sack, got down the chimney and delivered the goods, and he took them under the Christmas tree, because we've got Alex Volkanovski versus Ilya Topuria in February in California. And I'm glad Volk gets a little bit of time. They were talking about January. Gives him a little bit more time to recover, a bit more time away from the KO, let himself heal, recover, have a full camp and come in and just extinguish the flame of Ilya Topuria and let him know who top dog is at 145 pounds.
Look, I got to give props to Topuria for putting out his own commercial for this fight. He paid and developed his own ad campaign for this. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
And I think that's fucking sick, and like, good on him, because I mean,
it's take note, people, take note, fighters. This is what gets people talking about you. This is how he is becoming a name. People are paying attention. All of a sudden, everyone wants a piece of Ilya Topuria. Businesses in Spain want a piece of him. Come and be our spokesman. Come and do this with us. Come and get on this platform. We want to interview you. This is what you do. Smart. Really. And I really like Topuria as a fighter as well. I just don't like him anywhere near as much as I like Alexander Volkanovski.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. That's the thing. I think it's going to be a good fight, though. I think, you know, I'm positive Volk's just going to do what he normally does and just walk down, outpiece, outmaneuver, switch stances, just do like mix up everything and just outwork him. But Topuria is fucking amazing, dude. So, you know, and as we know, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Anything can happen. And I'm very, 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 very excited to see this. It's going to be great. And we don't have long to wait. February will not take long to get to us. And the third one, this is the one that's got people talking and clicking and chattering online because they don't like it. The people do not like it. And once again, the UFC is protecting Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley, who apparently stinks and can't beat anyone unless the UFC handpicks an opponent, despite the fact that he just bonked out the bantamweight that everyone was calling the greatest of all time, Aljamain Sterling. Mm-hmm. He handled him. He stuffed his takedowns. But all of us, no. The UFC is protecting Sean O'Malley, giving him favorable matchups because they know once Merab Dvashvili gets a hold of him, it's all over Red Rover. Bullshit. Let's just take a step back and look at this, because everyone is seriously, seriously mad. Merab Dvashvili is a very, very good fighter, and he's excellent at what he does. Let me pull up the rankings, and let's see where he's ranked. He is ranked number 2 in the world right now, while young Chito Vera is ranked number 6. So immediately people go, well, how is this fight happening? What's going on here? First of all, Marlon, that's the other one. Mirab and Henry Cejudo have already been talking and dancing about a fight that maybe was going to happen in December. That's now being pushed back to January. That will be for the number one contender spot, guaranteed. That's a big fight for Mirab, and it's not guaranteed that he gets through Henry Cejudo, because Henry is serious business. So that's the first point. Mm. Second of all, this is not just about results. Everyone points to Merab's 9-fight win streak and says, well, he's there on merit. He's got a good record. He's put a lot of good wins together. He's also just so utterly boring. And Sean O'Malley is pay-per-view goodness. He is a lightning rod. He is a crossover star. He brings eyes to the sport that others cannot. And you know what he can do as well? He can tell a story and a narrative, and he can make that happen with the only loss that he suffered in his career that he claims wasn't a loss, to Chito Vera. What a storyline that is for the UFC to be able to put together. And yeah, okay, Chito Vera came off a win against Pedro Munhoz. Was it the most impressive? No. Did he come off a loss against Corey Sandhagen before that? Yeah, he did. Absolutely. But you know what also happened? Merab Dvashvili spent the last 2-3 years, however long it was, telling the UFC he will never fight for the title as long as Aljo is champion. You can't expect to publicly sit there and tell the world you don't care about the belt, and then when all of a sudden circumstances change, be upset that you're not getting an opportunity at the belt over someone that has a win over the current champion. I'm sorry, Merab. You knew this was a possibility when your guy went in and faced Sean, that someone who was fighting on the card, the UFC was already setting it up then. They were putting the groundwork in to go, hey, remember when Sean won the belt? Yeah, well, his next opponent, the only guy to have a win over him in his pro career, is also fighting on the card. Oh, and guess what? He got a win. What an amazing coincidence and timing. We can put those two guys together and we can make that fight happen. It's absolutely insanity. Dana White said over and over and over and over again, he doesn't like it. There's no friends in this business. Take the opportunities when you get them. And whether you like that or not, whether you are in principle against it, whether you think there should be more sporting merit to it, that is not the world in which we live, ladies and gentlemen. That is where the way the sport goes right now. And while the UFC determines the matchups and is responsible for rankings and determine who fights for the belt, absent of an external, you know, sanctioning body or of an athletic commission taking over this role, you've got to play the game. And Merab Dvalishvili has not played the game. And even if that was the case, and you said, oh no, absolutely, he needs to be there on sporting merit, he's peeled off a good record, you know, a good winning streak. Mm-hmm. You can very, very quickly cast aspersions on his record, considering he has one stoppage finish in his UFC winning streak, and that was against Marlon Moraes, who's made of glass, eggs, poppadoms, and everything else fragile in between. That dude is washed. Oh, and don't forget, he nearly had Merab knocked out cold in the first round. It was actually a great combat by Merab, and actually one of the more memorable fights, but he still went life and death with Marlon Moraes. The rest of the guys he fought, Casey Kenney, who? Don't give a shit. Gustavo Lopez, no longer in the UFC. John Dodson, no longer in the UFC. Cody Stamann, meh. The most meh of bantamweights. Jose Aldo, retired. Didn't do anything. Didn't throw a strike in that fight against Jose Aldo. He held him up against the cage and he breathed in his ear and whispered sweet nothings for three rounds. And you know what the most despicable thing about that fight was? The worst thing that Merab absolutely did, and this is why he should never, ever, ever get a title fight if I was commissioner, he ruined the retirement announcement of the legend Jose Aldo. Who does he think he is? Aldo said that to him in confidence on the mat, and then Merab just comes along and goes, oh yeah, we said it was his last fight. Who do you think you are taking that away from Jose Aldo? Absolutely disgraceful. And then, okay, you had a very good performance over Peter Yan, but Peter Yan at this point is so far removed from the bantamweight title picture, that's not a number one contender spot either. He was coming off back-to-back losses. So, I don't know, man. It's a weird one. This makes it sound like I've got some like blood feud with Merab Dvalishvili, and I really don't like the guy. He's a very, very talented fighter, but sometimes it's got to be more than grappling and crotch sniffing your way to a decision to get yourself into the title picture. Ask Bilal Muhammad and now ask Jailton Almeida as well. Like, sometimes you've got to go for it. Sometimes you've got to try and put a guy away. And when you're being so dominant across all of these guys, especially further down the rankings and the ladder, the fact that he didn't get decisions over any of them goes, you know what, Merab? Maybe you're not ready. Maybe you need to test yourself against a couple more top-level guys before we give you a crack at Sean O'Malley and cut you a giant check for doing so.
For sure, man. I agree with everything you just said. I think he's probably carved his way into this crotch-sniffing purgatory. And it's this point where, you know, yet again, you're just going for decisions, you're holding people down, and they're not exciting fights because it's not like you're really going for submissions. You're not trying to finish the guy. You're just fucking humping the guy against the cage. And
crotch-sniffing purgatory.
And then, as you said, he's not fucking going for the title fights either. He's, no, I can't fight my friend. No, he can have the belt. No. UFC needs to move things along. He wasn't playing the game. As you said, he's not sellable. No one wants to watch that fucking fight. People want to watch a storyline. You know, they want to watch everything. People who are there to fight every single fucking time. Chito Vera is game every single fucking time. So I'm happy.
That's it, man. That's why he's in this position.
I'm happy it's happening.
By the way, the fight as well. The UFC remembers these things. And I'm quite sure at the time. Let me pull this up. Where is he? I'm pretty sure at the time, Sean O'Malley, like when he fought Marlon Vera, no one wanted to fight Sean O'Malley at that point because he was, you know, he was running through everyone, and Chito Vera sort of went, yeah, okay, I'll do that fight. I think I can beat him. And he did. But he was a veteran, and he was coming off a loss to Song Yadong as well, and a loss there to Sean O'Malley. Sort of, you go, oh, what are you doing? But he took that fight knowing what it could give him. And UFC was finding it hard at the time to book fights for Sean O'Malley because he was just, you know, starching all of these lower level guys. He was rewarded with a fight against a fight against Jose Aldo. And okay, he lost that fight, but that was a better Jose Aldo than the one that Dvashvili just beat. And you start to look at the wins that Chito Vera has, and you go, I understand he had a loss to Corey Sandhagen recently. But in that mix, he's got a brutal win over the legend Frankie Edgar, and then wins over Rob Font, former champion, Dominic Cruz, and Pedro Munhoz, all guys inside the top 10. That itself, those wins stack up better than any of the wins that Merab has. So even on a resume basis, you can still make a case. You dump the beautiful narrative on top of it, and it's the clear case. It's the easy fight to make. It's the right fight to make. Merab didn't have a problem fighting Henry Cejudo when Aljo was champion. Remember when Aljo was champion and he beat Henry Cejudo, and immediately the talk was, well, it'll be Cejudo versus Merab next. And he said, I'm going to get revenge and take out your teammate. He was happy to have that fight then. He should be happy to have that fight now.
Precisely.
And if he beats Cejudo, great. You've earned it. Number one guaranteed. Nowhere else for Sean to go. Let's see what happens. Unless Corey Sandhagen comes back into the mix and goes, hello, I'm back. Don't forget about me and my torn triceps.
That'd be Corey Sandhagen's coming up that ranking. I think he, like, now that Aldo's... That might not be a bad fight to rematch if Aldo's still in the same weight division. Get Corey Sandhagen versus the former champ. Yeah,
I wouldn't hate that.
Because then Corey can take back that loss that he's got, because he got guillotine choked to death, right? I'm pretty sure.
I believe that was the case, yeah.
Wouldn't be bad. So, I think we talked a lot about all these beautiful upcoming title fights. I reckon we crack on into the week coming up, man. I'm excited.
UFC 295. Obviously, everyone knows what is going on with the reshuffle. And now we have a new main event, and is the battle of two of the most violent, two of the most insane, two of the most off the wall fighters on the planet. And they just both happen to be UFC light heavyweights, both happen to be former champions. Yuri obviously forfeiting the light heavyweight belt. Alex Pereira briefly held the middleweight belt. It doesn't get better than this. This is high, high level fighting. Whether Pereira is as well rounded as Yuri, we don't think he is. But the striking matchup between these two guys is going to be wild, man. I cannot wait.
Yeah, but power and dynamic movement, man. Like from Yuri, and then you just got like pure fucking unrelenting, stone-faced power coming from Alex Pereira. I saw a tweet recently. It's just like, I feel like the main event should just be held in the UFC arena and just let them hunt each other throughout the crowds. And they're fucking perfect.
Absolutely. What a great idea. But you know who would assassinate both of them? The most dangerous man on the roster, Benoit Saint-Denis. He would hunt them down and cut their tendons, and they would and stab them so many times, they'd be dead before they even hit the ground. Benoit Saint-Denis, the ultimate assassin, the most violent man in the UFC.
Sexy French Rambo going on. I like it. I'm all in for it.
Absolutely. We'll talk a bit more about him shortly, but this main event is superb. If you've got a pick either way, I'm very curious to see what you've got.
I love Yuri too much, man. I think he's just such a character. He just seems like he was one of the first people that I remember in recent history, at least, vacating the belt and not holding on to it due to an injury. Like, the amount of honor that you have to have, like the amount of, just like self-discipline and just wherewithal and care for other people to not just hold on for that. What a fucking man. That is.
He's a samurai. He is a samurai, and he's inspired me to maybe over the weekend watch The Last Samurai so I can enjoy alpha males both in the UFC and on the cinematic screen.
Just white men dominating Japanese culture. Just historically, that hasn't been a fucking problem, has it, Lewis? and Alex Pereira, obviously, he's a character too. He's great. Obviously he's quite stoic and he looks quite dangerous and stuff like that, but he seems like a lot of fun, obviously.
He's a funny guy, man. Like, he's like he doesn't present himself as this like gregarious outgoing character, but he's funny. He's really funny. Yeah. There's some little snippets you get from him, but yeah, stoic AF.
I like them both, man, but I've got to have Jury in this fight. I think Jury just fucking, he comes back with like a bat out of hell and takes his title back, man. That's what I think.
Yeah. My counter to that is Alex Pereira possesses one of the best bases for MMA, and that's alcoholism. And so he certainly is going to be a challenge in this fight. Now, it's just going to be great. But for me, the actual, my main event on this card is Tabitha Ricci versus Loopy Goodness. No, is obviously the co-main event between Sergey Pavlovich and Tom Aspinall. I'm not sure if you saw the clip going doing the rounds of Michael Bisping doing his bit for TNT Sports, and he was asked about it. And I'm not sure whether Michael Bisping is a follower of the Punch Drunk podcast, almost certainly not. But he said something that I said quite some time ago, and he's getting a bit of flack, people saying he's, you know, gassing his boy up too much. But he said he'll make light work of Pavlovich. If he fights John Jones, he'll beat him and he'll dominate the heavyweight scene for a long time. And I have maintained my position that the only heavyweight on the planet who will beat John Jones or could beat John Jones in this era, in this iteration, is Tom Aspinall. I think he's the only one who has the tools to do it, to be able to grapple with him, to be able to strike with him. You have the speed and the footwork to get in and out of range and to challenge John Jones. I think Tom Aspinall's that guy. He's that guy, pal. He's that guy. And I think, we're going to have another British UFC champion, albeit interim. I don't care at this point. He's going to be champ and it's going to be absolutely magnificent. Big Tommy Aspinall getting it done.
I agree, man. I mean, like in this new era right now, unless we had like Andre Arlovsky for when he first started, like coming back in, like if he was placed in this timeline right now, I'd love to see that. Other than that, I think Tommy Aspinall, man, I'm all in for the train. Sergey's fucking dangerous though, dude. He
very dangerous
away, but yeah, it's gonna be I'm going to be having an anxiety attack this entire time. You know when you care about, like, it used to happen when, for me, it was like every McGregor fight when he first started coming up, I felt sick to my stomach. And I think it happens when you really enjoy a fight. You just don't want them to get
you don't want to lose, because you want the gravy train, the good times, to just keep rolling. And especially, I was the same with McGregor, because you knew the next fight would be even bigger and even more. And something, you're like, I just want more of that. I want to bottle it and have it, enjoy it. I'm going to have that for Tom Aspinall as well, especially when he's facing a guy with a couple of anvils instead of fists.
It's a scary matchup, man, but I'm so keen to watch it. Yeah, I'll be really, really keen to see how it turns out, and let's just hope Tommy Aspinall, his knee stays together and everybody happy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Next fight down on the card is an interesting one. You've got former champion Jessica Andrade taking on Mackenzie Dern. Some more Brazilian-on-Brazilian violence. But Jessica Andrade, for someone who's recognized as, you know, one of the best female fighters to ever do it, and really someone who only lost to the best of the best, up until recently, she'd only lost, you know, when, let's call her at her peak, because I want to count 2015. She was very, you know, much younger back then. She was finding a way in the sport. But she got to the top and she only lost to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, then Zhang Weili champion, Rose Namajunas champion, Valentina Shevchenko champion. And you go, oh, okay, that's an interesting one. She was able to win the championship. She slammed Rose into oblivion with that amazing performance. But since then, she's bounced up and down between strawweight, between flyweight, went up and had her opportunity against Val, got dominated, and then peeled off very good wins over Calvillo, Lemos, just beat the brakes off of Lauren Murphy, beat the brakes. Just, oh, that was that one where everyone was like, throw in the towel. Yeah. And Lauren Murphy was like, no, I'm invincible. I did heroin. I don't need referees.
Yeah, man. And
but now
skid.
She's on, but a big skid, man. Okay, yeah. Fair play to her. She stepped in short notice. Or did Erin Blanchfield step in short notice? Anyway, that was a short notice fight, and she got tapped by Erin Blanchfield. No shame in that. Then she got murked by Yan Xiaonan, and then to get submitted by Tatiana Suarez. Who was making, you know, who'd only just come back after a long, long layoff. She came back, she beat Montella De La Rosa, fine. But to lose to Tatiana Suarez in that fashion, if she loses four in a row and there's every chance she gets submitted by Mackenzie Dern, given her propensity to get submitted, does she have to start considering what she does with her career? Does she step away? Does she leave the UFC? Does she maybe try another organ? I don't know, but four losses in a row, all by stoppage. It's not great.
No, not. And again, as you say, like the quality of her opponents that she's fighting against. I mean, both Mackenzie Dern and Jessica Andrade have a loss against Yan Xiaonan. Erin Blanchfield, as we know, is coming up dominate. Tatiana Suarez, undefeated.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, you like, great point. Great point.
It's not, and as we know, in these divisions where maybe the amount, there's a lack of quantity of fighters. I feel like they're more likely to stick around for longer because there's so many, like, you know, let's just say, and in the lightweight division, there's so many people that are around that lightweight just like begging to get into the ranks. It's very easy to go on a 3-fight skid and just get cut from the UFC. You could even do on a 2-fight skid if you're not selling pay-per-views.
You could do a 5-fight skid if you're Karolina Kovacevic, and then back, and she's peeled off 4. So, you know, it can be done. There is a roadmap in this division as well to get your career back on track. I know you always like a shout out of Karolina.
Don't we all, man? Oh, Polish deliciousness. I love her. She looks so kind. Yeah, I'll be keen to see, actually Mackenzie Dern get a win over Jessica Andrade. I just feel like every time I watch Andrade, it's like, they're just these big looping hooks, just strolling down. She's out trying to out-muscle in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, she's thrown away her technique.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're just going to get any of these people that are coming up, any of these girls that are just coming up with any semblance of range, any semblance of understanding patterns and stuff like that, they're just going to fucking piece her up and outwork her, I think. So,
dude, we were literally sat next to each other watching her against Yan Xiaonan, and I turned to you and I said, she's getting bonked by a straight hand, like straight down the middle. I'm like, 30 seconds later, it was all over because she was just, and she's like, bonk. That was it. That was all she wrote. It was beautiful. I wish I bet on that. Unfortunately, I did not, because I only ever lose bets.
Matt Frivola, Benoit Saint-Denis, baby.
Fight of the night. Like, there's no way this is not fight of the night. There's just absolutely no way that this fight doesn't live up to expectations. This is Chandler Gaethje. This is Gaethje Poirier. This is the kind of fight that absolutely matches up to it. Benoit Saint-Denis, as I like to call him, is the most dangerous man in the UFC. His only loss was on his debut. He came in at short notice in a welterweight bout, way above his weight class, and survived somehow an absolute onslaught. This dude is absolutely nails. And now he comes off and he peels off 4 consecutive wins, all by stoppage. He's just so, so entertaining. And his whole career is just absolutely insane. He was a member. I love this. I just got to like roll it off. He's a judo black belt. Then he was in the 1st Marine Infantry Paratroopers Regiment. He served in Mali and in West Africa fighting terrorist groups. He was awarded the Medal of the Nation's Gratitude and the Combatant's Cross. And then he left the army after 5 years of service. He's an absolute monster. He is a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Oh, and you think that's cool? He just married his fiancée a week before he fought. And she's a former French international football player who won the European Champions League. She's a dog trainer and shooting instructor in the police and was the first French female police officer who underwent the special weapons and tactics SWAT course. The couple had a daughter in July 2023, and that girl is going to be Angelina Jolie's character from Soul. She is without doubt going to be an absolute assassin. Get that girl lined up for Black Widow 2. That's her. 100%, done.
Man. Like, I mean, you would not want to fucking break into that household, hey?
Can you imagine breaking into...
Yeah, fucked.
You never, ever, ever want to be the boy who ends up dating her when she grows up. Oh yeah, come home and meet my mum and my dad. Benoit Saint-Denis. He was UFC champion and killed 1,000 people in West Africa. Oh, yeah. And by the way, my mum trains all the French police in weapons and dogs and shooting. Imagine.
Just come around for a beautiful butter lace dinner, as the French do, and for dessert, we'll give you a casual waterboarding. Jesus Christ. Should have known better, huh?
His tattoos are badass as well. I know, I want to get onto Frivola because he's a badass and he deserves respect in his own right as well. But he's got a dagger from the French Special Forces, the samurai helmet from his French BJJ club, Joan of Arc for chivalrous spirit, and a Templar cross reminding him of the security missions he carried out in Mali. This motherfucker looks at his tattoos every single day and is like, oh yeah, remember all those people I killed in Mali? That's the kind of shit that you're dealing with.
It's a scary, scary fucking time, man. Frivola coming off a win from Drew Dober, who has the biggest chin on the planet. You know, fucking stonked him, man. I mean, like, right hook.
He did. He's three fights, 3 first round KOs in a row after losing to Terence McKinney in 7 seconds. A lot of people would have crumbled and gone, you know what? This isn't for me. Absolute credit in the world all the credit in the world to Matt Frivola for going, you know what? Fuck that. I do belong here. I do belong in the upper echelons of this division. And he's gone bang, bang, bang. And everyone was saying that Omar Azatar was going to starch him. And then everyone was saying that Drew Dober was going to starch him. And he's got a great team working with Sarah Longo there. He's just a tough, tough dude. And it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be an easy out for Benoit Saint Denis. I don't want to pick a winner. I'm just going to pick violence. There will be blood. There will be blood. Daniel Day-Lewis is erect.
I just want to say something about this. Like, he hasn't been the most active fighter since Terence McKinney fight, right? He's fought 3 times. Terence McKinney's fought 8 times.
Yeah, it's mad. Terence McKinney is mad active and also probably has probably taken fights that haven't done him any good. He also took that short notice fight against Brendan Marotti that was like fighting a dude out of the Arby's parking lot. So,
not all the most class acts, but it's just interesting because, like, you know, I want to obviously see more of him. I just wonder why he's not quite as active as some of the other guys. You know,
I think he struggled to get fights as well, to be honest, man. And I think he was also holding out for the Paddy Pimblett fight.
All right.
But he didn't. Paddy won't fight in New York. He won't fight in New York because of the taxes. He only wants to fight in Vegas. So that, and I also think he just wasn't going to be ready for December for November, so that they're giving him an extra month to prepare and have his camp. But yeah, Frivola's a dog, man. He's only 33, man. Just coming into his prime, getting that strength, and he looks swole. I just see he just posted on Twitter he's got 9 pounds of weight to drop between now and the weigh-in, and he looks thick, man. He looks big for lightweight. So this is going to be a great fight. This outside of the Tom Aspinall fight, this is the fight I'm looking forward to the most. Even though the main event is absolutely electric, this is the one. This is it. And we ride into battle with Benoit Saint Denis. And fair play to Matt Frivola as well. He was a veteran. He was in the US Army. And this is actually taking place over Veterans Day, US Veterans Day weekend, I think. And it's obviously Remembrance Sunday. Yeah, Veterans Day, Remembrance Sunday, 11th of November, 2 servicemen. 2 men who served their country proudly, rolling in to just punch the piss out of each other inside a cage. Man, what more could you want?
Big appreciation for thick ginger men as well. He's who I want to be. You know, still got to roll with Benoit for this one. But yeah, it's another one of these fights. We love both of these fighters. And there is obviously that divisiveness in your heart. Why does one of them have to lose? But it's going to be a fucking bloodbath, man. I'm really excited for it.
Absolutely.
What else are you looking at on this card, man?
To be honest, none that I'm like, oh yeah, we should definitely... There's only one name that I just want to throw out there just because he did so well on his UFC debut, came in and beat David Dvorak. Big Steve Ursek fighting out of Australia, coming down to New York, and he's taking on Alessandro Costa, which Costa's not ranked. So shout out to Steve Ursek, just gets into the rankings and is like, yeah, I'll put it on the line against someone. Very, very impressed by him. His performance was great. So hoping to see him get a win. You know, there's a few other fun, decent fights on this card. No, I would say no, like, massive standout names.
I think maybe the Jared Gordon Mark Madsen fight will be cool. It'll be interesting to see the wrestling and everything that comes out of that fight, and if Jared Gordon can stonk him out, I guess. Always good to watch.
Yeah, I know you're less interested in her now. She's got a boyfriend and he's a professional boxer.
A little bit sad.
She's off the market.
Baby shark. in fact, this would be fun. We were talking to one of our boys the other night about the ovs and evs, the overs and unders on the ovs and evs names. We've got an ov versus an ev as well.
Yes.
We've got Nazif Zakov versus Vyacheslav Borchev. So, yeah, that'll be a fun one. Nice.
Borchev, he hits like a truck. Yeah. If he lands, he's a powerful dude, if I remember correctly. He mucked Chris Duncan in the Contender Series. And he had a few decision losses, but the fights that he's won have been by stoppages. He's a hard puncher, man. So that could be an interesting one for sure.
Otherwise, man, I think it's just going to be a good card overall. I think just leading up into the as we get into the main card, it's just increasing in quality as it comes. So super happy and really keen to watch this one.
Absolutely, no doubt. Get on out of here, buddy. Tell the people what they need to know.
All right, guys, you can give us a follow on YouTube at PunchDrunkPod with an extra D on the end. Twitter at PunchDrunkPod _, IG at PunchDrunkPod. You can follow Lewis Glover MMA on Twitter. Lots of fun stuff on there. He's riling up some people. He's getting some good views. So yeah, definitely check him out. You can follow me, Jamie Trezellian, on Instagram. As always, guys, we really appreciate you guys listening. Give us a 5-star on Spotify, Apple reviews if
do
you
it.
Can.
It helps keep click that review button. Helps subscribe.
Keep us, it helps keeps us rolling. But yeah, thanks as always, guys. We'll see you next week.
Peace.